Final hour, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rexroad here with the venerable David Beauclair of SI.com, Michelle Knezovic. And Robbie and Rexroad is sponsored by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Very happy to welcome into the show, as we do every Monday at 9 o'clock, another legend, Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica Chase, which is, of course, coming up right after this show from 10 to 2. Also, pregame, postgame host for the Nashville Predators broadcast on 102.5 The Game. Darren, I just got to ask you, we had a lot of stuff in the football weekend, college and pro. What are the burning topics for you coming out of that weekend today for your show? Give us a little taste. Give us a little preview.
Well, I will tell you off the air, there's been some really good shows this weekend because I don't have a particular take that I guess is popular. I guess everybody's ready for a change, and I understand that. I get it. You know, the usual suspects coming to the party for the college football playoffs, and I'm just not interested in that. Everybody's, oh, thank goodness Cincinnati got in. Oh, Nubo, oh, it's great. Yeah, you can't bang on Washington and other teams that we've seen come in, and Notre Dame, people love. They have no business being in there. If Cincinnati had Notre Dame on the front of their jersey, nobody would be saying they should be in the playoffs. I know why they're in there, but I'm just not as excited as everybody is. I have had some pretty spirited debates over the weekend with friends of mine who are just elated that Cincinnati's, oh, this is the greatest thing for college football. Yeah, when they get rolled by Alabama and everybody's sleeping in the second half, you tell me how great this story's been.
I need you and Ryan Porth to have an on-air debate. I think that's what we're trending toward.
We have. Because my take is this Cincinnati team wouldn't beat last year's Cincinnati team. They wouldn't. Last year's Cincinnati team was more deserving in my mind. They were the better team. Porth disagrees, but, you know, I guess we'll never know. Last time I checked, I don't think they're going to suit up and after it's all over and play each other. So, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just telling you that I'm just not – it seems like all the feedback I'm getting is everybody's just so excited. Cincinnati's in. This is great. I get it. It's new blood. But are they really deserving? Are they really one of the top four teams in the country? When I watch them, okay, you got one win. That's awesome. How many teams in the country, if they had one game to get up for in their entire season, would go undefeated with Cincinnati's schedule? I mean, it's not hard to start collecting other teams that could run the table like them. I mean, the Notre Dame win's nice. Okay, so you had one win, and you deserve to be in the playoffs, and you got to play your championship game at home? I mean, come on. I guess I'm a little bit of a Baby Ruth in the punch bowl today. You asked, Joe. Yeah, Joe, you asked.
That Notre Dame win was a real problem for the committee. Like if they hadn't beaten Notre Dame, which is now ultimately top five in the rankings, then you could make a case for keeping them out. But I think the way it played out, you have to put them in there, and we'll find out once and for all whether a group of five team can compete at that level.
I will argue with you, Darren. I hear you on the schedule. I mean, look, it's always going to be an argument that it's hard to refute. You know, power like an ACC team, an SEC team. Well, okay, an SEC team, a Big Ten team, some years an ACC team. They're going to have a much tougher week-to-week road. But I would say, if you say, are you sure they're one of the top four teams? I feel pretty good about them being one of the top four teams. It's just like Georgia. You can look at Georgia and say, well, you know, what their top ranked team they beat this year is what, like 19th or whatever? Well, if you watch Georgia play, yeah, they were going to get in no matter what. They were the best team. They dominated people. I think Cincinnati is that good. Now, that doesn't preclude them from getting blown out, because people get blown out in this playoff every year, right?
They played good teams. They didn't play great teams every week, but they beat SMU like a drum. They beat Memphis. They beat Houston. I mean, these are good football teams, not, you know,
yeah, it's not total dregs.
Right. You know, it's not like, I'm trying to think of an example where there was like one, like Memphis basketball back in the day, you know, where like they were the only team in their conference and, you know, everything else was just kind of a laugher. This is, you know, this They played good football against good teams, and you know we'll find out now.
Yeah, look, I want to expand. I want schools to get the opportunity, but you know, look, they're benefiting from the big boys being down this year. It's not their fault. It's not their fault that their conference was down this year. We've seen Houston be better. We've seen SMU be better. We've seen teams in their conference that are highly ranked, right? And it's not their problem. It's not their fault that the teams in their conference were down a little bit this year than maybe the last couple of years. That's not their problem. I'd like to see it expanded a little bit more where we can. If Oklahoma State beats Baylor, what happens then? Is Oklahoma State still out?
Nope.
I don't know.
I'm absolutely convinced Cincinnati was out in that scenario.
Okay.
I lean towards Cincinnati still gets in, but I can buy it. I think it would have been – I mean, yesterday would have been actually worth like an hour of the 4 hours that they made us sit there for that show. Like it would have been a good hour of argument versus like, hey, we're live at Baylor where no one's here and some people might have had lunch today. Back to you. Like, huh? Anyway.
By the way, did anybody see the Texans-Colts game? Wow. Have they checked out in Houston or what?
I said that earlier, Darren. There were several moments in that game where you just thought there were players on Houston's team that just were thinking, I don't want this right now. I don't want to take that hit. I don't want to they are done.
Oh, David, I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about the fans.
Yeah, the fans the in players. Particular. Yeah.
That, I mean, there was 1,000 people there?
There was no one there.
Rough, yeah. The crowd was really thin.
It's been a while since I've seen an NFL game look like that. I mean, you had to look pretty hard. You had to really be searching to try to find somebody in the stands. It was bad.
Yeah, and of course, you immediately – I mean, I know I did. I was like, gosh, the Titans just lost to that team. pretty amazing stuff. So where do you think they are, Darren? We know that like the injury list this week are just – hot off the press news, but how do you feel about this team's chances of kind of being reinvigorated and gearing back up and playing good football again?
I mean, I feel good about it. I don't think anything has changed. I think, Joe, you can go back to when the Derrick Henry injury happened. What has that now been? Five weeks? 4 weeks? I don't know how long it's been.
Five
weeks since that and that. This hit on this Monday after it happened, and everybody was doom and gloom. And I still think everything can play out exactly what we talked about that morning at 9 o'clock. I don't – at the AFC, by the way, if you – it's hard to figure out who's – honestly, it's really across the league. It's the NFC, I think, is a little bit better, or it is. It's better. But you still don't know from week to week what you're getting. I mean – Patriots could easily lose tonight. In fact, I think the Bills are going to win tonight. That's going to set everything in motion. The Ravens, they finally lost a close game. I mean, I figured they were going to win because that's all they do is win 1-2 and 3-point games. But it finally bit them in the behind last night when Harbaugh decided to go for two. I mean, do the Ravens look like a juggernaut? Does anybody look like a juggernaut? I mean, the Chiefs' defense has come back to life. That's great. Then their offense was sputtering around last night. They got the win. Look, I understand it. When you have Mahomes, people are still going to, if they just keep winning, people are going to say, that's the team to beat. But can the Titans get back in gear and still get the one seed? Yes, I think they can. You know, I don't know. I mean, if bodies just continue to, and we just see – practice squad after practice squad guy out there, I guess eventually that's all going to catch up to you. And well, I mean, it has a little bit, but it'll continue. But no, I think they can come out of this break that was much needed and get themselves right back in position.
So Darren, you got the Preds, a big overtime win. I mean, you know, those 3-on-3 sessions can be just exhausting to watch and just thrilling. You know, Forsberg picks up his stick. Granlund continues his wizardry, finding especially Forsberg. But you know, it's a win loss. It's a win loss. They're up and down lately. Where do you think this team is going for a big road trip? Going to Detroit tomorrow. Then you got the Islanders, Devils, Rangers. Where do you think this team is? Can they find consistency?
Well, certainly that's what they're hoping for, and that's what Granlund was talking about after the loss in Denver to the Avs. A little bit over a week ago, them finding consistency. And they didn't, because they did exactly what you just said. They won, they lost, and they won on the homestand. So it's the same thing. But that was a good win. I don't know, Joe. I really just think this is what this team is. I think it's the same thing as going back to the Titans discussion. Isn't this kind of exactly what we've said about this Predators team coming into the season? They'll be right there at the line, right? There's a line, a playoff line, and they're going to be right there. And depending on the little winning streak, they'll be across the line and in. And if there's a little bit of a losing streak, they'll be on the outside looking in on the bubble. And isn't that kind of what they are? I mean, that's exactly where they sit, right there at that line. So I would say through 24 games, I'm not really that surprised. I just think this is kind of how they, you know, what they are. And they have to play a certain brand of hockey, and when they do, they're going to be successful. But you know how difficult that is? Think about what they do and what the brand is John Hines is looking for, how difficult that is to do, you know, for 82 games. That's hard. It's a hard style. I mean, it's a lunch pail. It's blue collar, all the stuff that we think about. It's about forechecking. It's about blocking shots. It's about winning puck battles. It's, you know, it's about doing things that typically there's times when you don't feel like doing. And so that's a hard style to be really, really consistent if you're just not loaded up and down a lineup. So I just kind of think this is what they are. That was a prime example. Quite honestly, I thought they should have hammered Montreal. They just lost to them, you know, 2 weeks earlier in Montreal, 6-3. Montreal's special teams is awful. They got no power play, no penalty kill. Predators had many opportunities with their power play to get something going. I thought the power play looked kind of inept on Saturday. I really didn't think it was very effective at all. Wasn't much going on, which they've had success in that. I thought they played around with Montreal too much. They were all over them in the third and still couldn't put them away. But, you know, in the end, it's about the 2 points, and they got the 2 points. But getting back to your question, I just think this is what they are. This is how they have to win games. And that's just a hard style to put together a 10-game winning streak when you're not loaded up and down a roster.
Yeah, I mean, five times in 24 games now, they've given up five goals or more, right? You think back to the Barry Trotz days, and granted, it was a little bit of a different NHL then, but you know, you'd go weeks without giving up four goals in a game. You'd lose a bunch 3-1, 3-2 in there, whatever. But this team has its bad nights a little too often right now. It needs to, you know, you need to sort of even out the performances a little bit more.
Yeah, and now they get an opportunity to go on the road and try to do that. They've been a 500 team on the road, right? So, and they've been a little bit better above 500 at home, but they play in some teams they can beat. I mean, the Islanders are struggling. You know, Detroit is Detroit, even though they're getting better. But this is a road trip that you can try to string together some wins. We'll see if they can do it starting tomorrow night.
Darren McFarland has been our guest. Thank you, sir. Looking forward to the show at 10. What can we look forward to today on Darren, Donick, and Chase?
A little bit of everything. You know, a little hockey, a little college football, a little NFL. We'll head east. We'll talk with Vince Ferrara. Teron Davenport joins us. So a lot going on. Just kind of like what you guys have been doing, just hitting on everything that was this weekend.
And a little bit of shade towards Cincinnati, apparently. So looking forward to that. Yeah, or a lot. Darren McFarland. Thank you, Darren.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Darren.
And when we come back on Robbie and Rex Show, we'll react a little bit of what Darren said. I need to get David Beauclair also. I mean, everyone in this town has played GM on Philip Forsberg, so now it's your turn, David, to play GM on Philip Forsberg. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Also, hit us up on the phone or text lines, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We got a lot of reactions on there on college football, which I'm going to get to, and I have been a little bit neglectful of the text line. I apologize. You knew some stuff was going to go wrong.
You got
today.
A lot of balls in the air today.
Exactly.
Unlike normal.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I normally just sit here and, you know, puke out fake Southern accents, and it's you know.
Joe, you're doing a great job as the point guard today.
All right, well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Michelle. Well, I'm going to chest pass to David Beauclair on Philip Forsberg. I mean, I've got to get your thoughts on that situation. You're David Poyle. How are you looking at this?
I mean, I want him, but I can't afford to overpay for him, right? I'm already paying two forwards $8 million a year for this year and at least three more. I've got a defenseman I'm paying a little more than $9 million a year. You know, I've got Mikael Granlund at $5 million a year, which feels like a little bit of a bargain right now. You know, and I mean, the good news is the goalie is taken care of for the next little while. This is where, you know, the Duchesne and Johansson contracts are the gifts that just keep on giving to this team, right? I mean, they just continue to be an issue, and you know, if you can unload one of those guys at the trade deadline, great. Then that makes it a whole lot easier to sign Forsberg. But you know, the cap's not going to be growing at the rate it was. You know, we're still coming out of COVID and all that. I mean, it's likely to be a fairly flat cap for the NHL for a little while here. I mean, can you afford another $8 million forward? That's that seems like a tall order for pretty much any team right now. Especially one with the contracts that the Predators have already on the books right now.
Well, and I agree with what Darren said on this team. I mean, you know, they're going to have some hot stretches and some cold stretches, and ultimately they're probably going to be about what they've been here lately, and they're probably going to be right around that line. I think I picked them to make the playoffs going into the season. I still feel good about that, but I don't think there's going to be a big margin either way. So let's take it to the trading deadline. And we know what has happened here in the past with Ryan Suter. You are, and let's say that, you know, really nothing has changed in the negotiations, and it's just, you know, you're hoping, but you're not going to overpay. And you may think, and you may be right, well, the only way this team is getting into the playoffs, which we know is important, it's important on a lot of fronts, is if number nine's in the lineup. How do you deal with that?
If you're David Poyle, you hang on to him then. I mean, that, you know, that's his record as a GM is, and he has said this many, many times, his goal is just get into the playoffs. Anything can possibly happen from there. So he is definitely not going to say, well, we're a good team, but we're not a team that's going to win the cup. So I'm going to unload a Philip Forsberg. I'm going to get some more prospects. I'm going to go forward. You know, I talked about last week though. That's a Forsberg is interesting when you consider they got him in a deadline deal for Martin Erat, right? Martin Erat was a 1999 draft pick, a seventh round draft pick at that. You know, later maybe even an eighth, because the draft was nine rounds back in those days. You know, you're still getting a really good return right now on a 1999 draft pick. Would it be the worst idea in the world to say, okay, we're going to trade Philip Forsberg at the height of his trade value and really turn that into something? I think that's pretty good GMing if you can do it. But it's also going to have to, you know, depending on the situation, you're also going to have a hard talk with your fans at that point if you decide to do it. And there's nothing, all that being said, there is nothing in David Poyle's track record, my dealings with him, things that he has said over the years that makes me think he would do that in any way, shape, or form.
To me, it's just a big mistake if he doesn't in that scenario. I understand, get in, and you know, certainly there are actually a lot of examples in this tournament. I mean, this tournament is different than, like, it couldn't be more different from, like, the NBA, which is almost always chalk. You know, here and there you have a mild upset. This tournament can be wacky, but I just, you know, if you you have to be realistic, don't you? Don't you still sort of have to compare yourself again? If this team is what it has been, don't you still have to kind of be realistic, compare yourself to the top teams in your conference, and understand that it would take a lot of things to break your way to win a series against one of those teams?
If you didn't make that kind of a move last year, you're certainly, you know, which was a crazy, you know, if there was ever sort of a year to throw up your hands and say, you know what, we're going to do things differently, that would have been the year to do it.
And I think, he may have, though, right? I mean, don't you think he may have had it gone, like all of a sudden they completely changed trajectories. And look, also, like Granlund, okay, last year, what does he bring back? A third? I mean, Forsberg brings back a haul.
A haul.
Right?
Right.
That's where it's different to me, too.
At 27 years old, a guy with 400 points in this league, you know, absolutely. Here's another thing if you're David Poile to consider. From, you know, in 2014, 15, 15, 16, 16, 17, Philip Forsberg didn't miss a game, right? Played 82 games a year, every year, young, strong, healthy. Look at the last three full 82-game seasons, 67, 64, 63, going in the wrong direction, right? He's already missed time this year. Who's to say he's not, you know, like, I mean, let's face it, right? Philip Forsberg is not the biggest guy on the ice on any given night in the NHL, but he plays a little bit bigger than his size. We've all seen the reverse checks. We've all marveled at that and whatnot. And good for him for playing a good, rough, physical style, not being afraid of the contact, all those sorts of things. How much has that started to add up on him? You know, it and he is at that age. Like, he's not an old man at 27 years old, but if you're going to pay him for 6 years, 8 years, whatever it's going to cost to lock him up, how "quote unquote" old is he going to be at the end of that contract? That's another thing you really have to think about in this situation.
Yeah, I do wonder. I mean, I hadn't even really entertained the idea of one of the other guys potentially. You know, because obviously those deals were, I mean, basically they were radioactive going into the year. I mean, those two guys are playing well.
Yeah,
you know, both of those guys, especially Duchesne.
Especially Duchesne, much better. Yes,
he's gone nuts this year. That's an interesting thought of, like, would one of them be attractive? Because, again, this isn't a rental situation with those guys.
Right.
I mean, this is a –
somebody's got to really want
it. It's a commitment. So I would be surprised. But if they were to continue that, you know, that performance, I suppose, you know, at least it maybe cracks the door open a little bit. When we come back, we're going to get back into college football. And a question on the text line: why is Alabama the one? Do they deserve it? We're going to get into that in the college football playoff coming up next. Robbie and Rex Show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, Joe Rex Road, David Beauclair from SI.com, in for Robbie, Michelle Knezovic, talking a little college football and getting to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I got a bunch of things going on in this sport. Oh, this sport's never boring. So, one, apparently Mario Cristobal is leaving Oregon. That's now kind of spreading around in the reports. It's been just a bizarre situation where it's been reported that he had a deadline of today to take the deal, which will pay him, I believe, upward of $8 million a year. Or Manny Diaz just gets to keep his job, which to me, once that gets out, if you're Manny Diaz, I mean, I guess you're going to keep the high-paying job. But,
yeah,
like, you're a total lame duck. And then also, if you're Cristobal, how do you, like, go back to Oregon? You know what I mean? Like, you have to complete the process here, which they are. But just awful, awful management of the situation by Miami, which is out there trying to, like,
by the way, doesn't have an athletics director at the
right
moment either. Yeah,
out
they're doing all this.
One. Yeah.
Trying to steal one from Clemson.
I mean, and not to mention, so all that stuff is just, they've handled this terribly. And believe me, they're not alone in college athletics on that front. But here's another thing. So from a piece from one of my coworkers at The Athletic, Manny Navarro wrote this piece, okay? So this segment of it, okay, let me read this to you. Quote, until recently, Miami's administration had been unwilling to allocate funds to the athletic department, instead leaving it to cover all expenses on its own. But the success of Miami's U Health system, which made more than $400 million in profits last year, and promises from big-time boosters and donors to back upgrades at Miami, changed the school's stance, end quote. I mean, we don't have time to unpack all that, but yeah. I mean, it's just like, are you kidding me? It's amazing. This sport never ceases to amaze. So he's moving, apparently, reportedly. Meanwhile, on the text line, I have a question about Cincinnati, or actually a comment about Cincinnati, and from Nate, who says, I feel like the committee will tell us all, okay, you had your group of five team in, they got boat raised, this is why they don't get in. So here's the thing. I a lot of people will say that, but again, Notre Dame gets boat raced. I covered Michigan State getting boat raced by Alabama. Washington gets boat raced. I mean, this is the first non-Power 5 team. Do you want to know how many teams have been blown out in this thing? I mean, largely, most of them. Most of these games have been blowouts. So that won't make Cincinnati all of a sudden stand apart from all these other teams. The problem is the top-heavy nature of the sport.
Yes. Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State have been significantly better than everybody else. Alabama is still really, really, really good. Georgia has caught up and is really, really good. And you know, we'll see about Michigan. I'm not convinced that Michigan can go toe to toe with Georgia right now. Now, I mean, I'll say this. I said this last week on the afternoon show. I'm an SEC snob, right? I believe that the college football world revolves around the SEC, and rightfully so. And it would make perfect sense to me, and not surprise me at all, to see an Alabama Georgia rematch for the national title.
Well, that's perfect segue to another source of, to me, angst that I don't think is on the right course. So here's Shane from Ashland City. Okay, ask on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, 615-737-1025, by the way. Do y'all agree with Alabama, number one, even with Florida, LSU, Arkansas, Auburn almost beating them, and Texas A&M beating them? I texted back, yeah, they have the best win by far. We'll talk about it later on the show. He said, but it's one win. They choked to 8-4 Texas A&M, almost choked to a 6-6 Florida team, 6-6 terrible SU team, 8-4 Arkansas, 6-6 Auburn team. Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. Shane, if you want to go through, again, almost lost to these teams, we can go through all these teams. And other than Georgia, you're gonna find a bunch of almost, okay? Look.
My answer to Shane is always in this sort of situation. When's the last time you asked somebody how you won? You see somebody walking down the street, hey, did your team win? Did you win or lose? That's the number one thing. That's what matters. That, you know, Alabama won 12 times this year.
Well, and then this also gets into something that I couldn't disagree with more, which is this, Georgia, fraudulent, exposed. Look, Alabama kicked their butt. Incredible performance by Alabama. Nick Saban, he's everyone's dad, all that stuff. I mean, you know, Kirby Smart, the questions about him are fair. Georgia is they have been the best team. They have dominated, and they have dominated some good teams, including some good teams on the road. Tennessee this year, I mean, I know some people laugh. I bring Tennessee into this. Tennessee this year, by the time they faced Georgia, had a very high-functioning offense. That's a team that almost outscored Pittsburgh, which, by the way, is the ACC champion and is in the Peach Bowl. That's a team that almost beat Ole Miss, which, by the way, is also in a New Year's Six bowl game. And Georgia went into Knoxville, gave up that early touchdown, and absolutely silenced them for the rest of the game. Georgia's been the number one team. They deserve it. I mean, you could make the case, you know, they shouldn't even have fallen more than to two. So that Alabama win, that's why, to me, they are the clear one. I don't think it was that close, Alabama-Michigan. That win is easily the best win of this college football season.
Yeah, it all goes – I guess this is human limitations, too. Like, reputation means something, too. It's easy to imagine Alabama as the number one team, so – You make Alabama the number one team based on their history. You know, history's not supposed to factor into this, but it can't help but do so. You know, when you think about what Alabama has accomplished the last 5 years, say, as opposed to what Michigan has accomplished the last 5 years, if you're trying to decide between those two as the number one team, well, who's it easier to believe is the number one team?
Well, you're not wrong. Now, I don't think it should be done that way.
I don't.
Not wrong.
I don't think they actually debate it that way. But I think that factors into people's thinking when they are debating the points that they do debate.
Yeah. Well, and also, yes, I agree. I think that certainly. You have that, but there's also the flip side, which is like Shane from Manchester City is like a lot of people. There's just total Alabama fatigue, right? It's like, oh, yeah. So you want it, yeah? You want it to be somebody different, which I understand. But again, this was not a squirrel finding I mean, this was a thumping. This was a defense jumping on, you know, what I do think is the weak point for Georgia that maybe has to be addressed, which is quarterback. Stetson Bennett can't give the ball away like that. But those are, I mean, they have elite players. They have the Heisman-winning quarterback. He's going to win the Heisman this week. Lighting them up, and I'm talking with some big-time throws. Georgia plays tons of man. They had, you know, those some of those crossing routes and stuff. I mean, you had to be pinpoint, and he had elite receivers, and also an offensive line that I couldn't believe Georgia couldn't pressure more. I mean, that was a thorough beating. And, look, I understand, too. Some are like, well, they just did this so that they wouldn't have the rematch right away. And then, of course, the committee said they didn't talk about it, and I don't believe that it's not at least in your mind. But I think the seedings are actually accurate, and, you know, we'll see. I think that we may be looking at two blowouts in these semifinals, but I'm not as convinced of that as I have been in some other years. Maybe I'm just being too optimistic right now. I actually think Michigan and Cincinnati, there's a path for both of them to give us good games.
Yeah, there is, but there, you know, that's always the case. I think you looked at some of those, you know, those teams you referenced earlier, like Washington, you thought was a team that could really give people problems. And there are people out there who are going to roll their eyes at this and again, but you know, the SEC teams go through, you know, it's not, when you get to the playoffs, it's not an unusual level of competition for an SEC team the way it is for, you know, some others, and I'm fully convinced that's why Lincoln Riley is going to USC, for example. Like he's had it pretty good at Oklahoma, where you have to play two or three really tough games a year and otherwise you're good, and you put together this great record and this reputation. You know, going to the Pac-12 now, he's going to get to play Arizona and Arizona State every year. He's going to, you know, it's not going to be this murderer's row that Oklahoma is going to face when it transfers to the SEC, particularly if it ends up in the SEC West. It's it's just people don't like to hear it, but it's just a fact. Like there's a reason the SEC teams have won so many national championships in football in recent decade plus whatever.
Well, Shane responds on the pairings. Hard to believe. No one was saying if Alabama won this weekend they'd be number one last week. I don't know if people were saying that or not. But you know what people were saying? They have no chance.
They have no chance. Well, yeah,
that's what I said.
Yeah. The discussion was, can a two-loss Alabama be in the top four? That was primarily what the discussion was.
The discussion was, yes, can if they keep it close, if they somehow manage to keep it close, can they still sneak in? What has to happen? All that stuff. They dominated them. I mean, when you have a win like that, that goes to the absolute top of the list, and again, you lost one other game on the road to a good, not great, but a good Texas A&M team. It's the obvious choice.
Show me any team in college football that had 13 great weeks this year.
Right, doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen.
Georgia had the most, and you know they had a bad one. And now we get to see if they can figure it out. Look, if we get Alabama-Georgia 2 in the title game, there's going to be fatigue out there. There's going to be people unhappy about it. I'm not missing a snap.
I mean, I'm not either. Yeah.
I'm okay with that. All right, final segment coming up here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. When the Nashville Predators have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you win a pair of tickets to a future Preds home game. Next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. Welcome back. Robbie and Rexrode, final segment. Joe Rexrode, David Beauclair of SI.com, has done a wonderful job of filling in for Robbie Stanley, who is on his way back from a magical weekend at Disney. So, David, we talked about a lot of stuff today. It went fast. What did we not talk about that we should have talked about that you wanted to talk about? This is it. This is your segment.
Oh, I think we're good. I will say we didn't talk a lot of Preds. I want to say the 3-on-3 the other night, the overtime period, was as good a 3-on-3 as I've seen in a long time. You know, the 3-on-3 when it started was very exciting end to end, and it sort of quickly morphed into, well, we're going to hold on to the puck and we're going to make you chase us for 45 seconds or so. Then we're going to get fresh bodies out there, and then we might try and score. But, you know, just we're going to hang on to the puck as long as possible. It really has changed into something that the NHL didn't want. But Saturday night was one of the more enjoyable, more compelling 3-on-3s I've seen in a long time.
I love it. Even when teams do that, because it's just fascinating to me, as you're trying to keep the other team from changing, and then they're trying to, like, okay, do we go now? I could watch 3-on-3 all day. Yeah. I mean, it's exhausting to watch, you know, but I love it. That was a big 2 points, because, like, if you mess up and don't get 2 points against that team after what they did to you at their place.
Yeah.
They needed that badly. So,
and the Preds back on the road. They got I think it's like 13 of the next 17 on the road or something absurd. Like they're out of town for a while. Apparently, they're going to have a big home run up to the Stadium Series game, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, most of this month is on the road. The only three home games this month would be next week against Calgary and Colorado, and then you got Winnipeg the final week. Everything else is on the road. So yeah, and they've been, you know, they've been pretty good away from home. They've been pretty good at home. See if they can do better than that. Jeremy Gover on Twitter, by the way, tweets in and says, completely agree. Poile cannot risk another suitor situation with a guy who would get the kind of return Forsberg would demand. You're convinced. And I mean, look, you've dealt David Poile a lot longer than I have. And I have no reason to dispute what your assessment there, but you just believe that it was just a non-starter with him.
No, if they're legitimately in the playoff hunt, or you know, or certainly among the top four in the division, I don't see any way he unloads Philip Forsberg at the deadline. Even if at that point Forsberg has said I'm not coming back, I mean, I think it would be hard for him to make that move.
I don't see any way there isn't a whole bunch of complaining then, if that's the case. I mean, it's an interesting situation. Derrick Henry, by the way, I wanted to touch on that real quick. The text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. A lot of good stuff today. And again, sorry to those of you who I didn't get to. Jim on the text line says, David's right about the significant risk re-injury with this type of fracture. Pardon the pun, this is a classic catch-22. Nice, Jim. If the rest of the team relatively healthy, you take your chances without risking him bringing back too soon. If the Titans are still as beat up as now, it's definitely not worth bringing him back when you have that little chance of making a run. That's an. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you look at it that way. I mean, if you get in the playoffs, it's. I mean, the NFL too, not quite like the NHL, but like you get in the tournament. We've seen those six seeds get to the Super Bowl.
The opportunities are so rare, and it's kind of how we got to this point, right? Like everybody knew going into this season that wear and tear and usage and you know, all that was going to be an issue with Derrick Henry. But what happened? You know, you do what you can to win every single Sunday, and for the Titans, that meant getting the ball in his hands a ridiculous amount of times to where I think it was what. As of last week, he still led or was second in the league in touches or something, right? I mean,
yes.
Like it was an absurd number, but who's complaining when you're winning 8 of your first 10 games, right? Like that's you do what you have to do to win, and the opportunities are so hard to come by in the NFL that again I go back to I know what Mike Vrabel says all the time about The health and safety of our players is first and foremost at all times. I know he says that, and I'm sure to a certain degree he believes that. But when you're sitting there looking at your team saying, do I want to give the ball to Deontay Foreman 20 times, or do I risk injury by giving it to Derrick Henry 20 times? If you know, you get to that point with Henry being back on the field, if we win this game, we're going to the conference championship. I mean, it's just going to be dreadful to try and make that choice.
Well, I will say though, I would guess. To me, if he's in uniform, then it's got to be like.
He's going to play. Yeah.
He play. So right. That whatever that means, there's no way, right, that he could be in uniform and they're like, but he can only get like 10 touches. If that's how you look at it, then don't even think about it. Don't even put him in a uniform, right?
Right.
But, you know, then of course if you do have a re-injury, then talk about second guess city.
Yeah.
If you get to that. You know, another thing I do think with the usage of Henry, I think it also does speak to the struggles with the offensive line right from the jump. Like they have – that offensive line has functioned well as a run blocking unit all year. It has functioned very poorly as a pass protection unit.
As we said.
I think that's part of like the equation here.
20 sacks in the first four games allowed. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that also, and that has gotten better. It's got to continue to get better. On the college front, Ben, on the text line, driven by WisconsinHundy.com, this college season couldn't have gone any better. New blood shows any team can make the playoffs if they schedule decent competition and win. It's interesting because there's some people saying that, and then there's the whole, Cincinnati. We're about to get a lot of that with Darren Donick and Chase, apparently, today.
Yes, apparently. But
I hope someone pushes back on that. I don't agree with Darren.
No, well, I said earlier, we've seen undefeated Group of Five teams play really well in the New Year's Bowl games with Central Florida beating Auburn, with Central Michigan playing well against – or Western Michigan
Western against Wisconsin.
Playing well against Wisconsin. You know, last year, Cincinnati, a three-point game against Georgia. In the last 6 years, this is the fifth time. The four other times, they've all been one-score games against what turned out to be pretty good teams. Central Florida losing by 8 to LSU, an LSU team that went on to win the national championship the next year. You know, so there was plenty of good players there. At some point, we had to have this happen. Now we're going to know. If Cincinnati loses by 50, it's going to be a hell of a lot harder for a Group of Five school to get in there the next time. If Cincinnati wins, makes a really good game of it, then we'll be in a similar situation, I would assume, before too long.
Are you for 12 or 8, either, both?
I am for a complete reworking of college football in terms of expand the playoff. You schedule the regular season to be like 9-10 games. If you don't make the playoff, then you add a couple games onto your season. There'd be some sort of format. You know, maybe that's where non-conference games and scheduling with other conferences, a little cross-pollination comes into play. I think, you know, you can't ask the players to play more games.
17 is possible. Yeah. If they go to 12?
Yeah,
a 17-game season is possible.
You can't do that. You have to cut the standard regular season down, and then let teams, the teams that don't make it, add on games after that.
And then every AD in the world says, David, let me show you how much a home football game means to me and whether our department. But I mean, I don't disagree with you. Something's got to give. Yeah. Student athletes. I heard a lot yesterday on ESPN. The student athletes have finals. So yeah. It is college, right? But, is it not college?
How many guys don't want to play in bowl games, right?
Well, that's true, too.
You know, I mean, they don't want the extra games. They want to get ready for the NFL.
Yeah, no doubt. David, thank you so much. Had a blast. That went super fast. Thank you, Michelle, for carrying us through this. This has been Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 125. The game. Darren Donick and Chase is next.